Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's that time, Oktoberfest. We've got oompa bands and beer all over, from Munich to Tempe, Arizona, tailgate season and brew. And these days, it may well be home brew. Homebrewed beer is hot, or we hope, pleasantly cold right now. Maybe it's the locavore impulse, maybe it's the recession, maybe it's the lure of all things handcrafted. This hour On Point, we've got home brew in the house and some great home brewers. You can join the conversation. Do you home brew? Are you in love with the magic of yeast and malt and hops and brew? What's your secret recipe? Does your neighbor have it going on? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And a big welcome today to our newest listeners, On Point listeners at KSTX-FM, Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. And I should say right off, I am a very moderate drinker, and we suggest no less or more. But home brewing has a fascination we want to follow up on here. We've got some great guests along to do just that. From Milwaukee, Rich Heller is with us. He's president of the Beer Barons of Milwaukee, a group of over 150 home brewers and beer lovers who meet monthly to taste and talk about beer and beer brewing. He's been making a lot of friends happy with his home brew since 1994. Rich Heller, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Wonderful to have you. From Manchester, Vermont, we are joined by Brad Ring, publisher of Brew Your Own magazine. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the program.
It's great to have you. And with me in the studio, along with more bottles than you can shake a stick at and a whole lot of brewing equipment, is Randy Barrell, manager of the Home Brew Emporium in nearby Cambridge, Massachusetts. He's been brewing his own for about a decade. Randy, wow, you have really brought in some stuff. What are we looking at on the table here, Randy?
Hello, Tom. We have here a bunch of equipment for your basic brewing setup. We have a variety of beer, and as it usually happens when homebrewers get together, try a little bit of this, try a little bit of that. Before you know it, we have the 16 bottles we have laid out here. That we're going to get to them all.
We won't get to them all. We'll sip a little bit. We've got some from you, Randy. We've got some from Rich Heller and the Beer Barons of Milwaukee on the table here, and Brad Ring as well has pitched in. We're really grateful to all you guys for sending this along. FedEx never had it so good. Brad Ring, give us just the simplest explanation of how beer is homebrewed.
Well, Tom, it's a basic process of taking usually barley malt and trying to get the sugars out of it. And it can be done either using all grain process or doing something using something called malt extract, which is a shortcut around the all grain process. And when you get the sugars together in a liquid form, you're going to boil those, add some hops to it at different intervals. And once the boiling is done, you cool it off, you add yeast, and you let the yeast do its magic.
Rich in Milwaukee, walk us through that one more time. I'm trying to see. I see buckets on the table here. I see a kind
Absolutely.
Of a funnel. I see a jar of pure malt extract. I'm sitting in my kitchen. I've got this stuff. What do I do? Step by step, Rich.
All right. I will start off. I will take, depending on the size of the pot, I started off in a 3-gallon pot.
Okay.
I would put 2 gallons of water in that, heat it to boil, turn off the flame, add the malt extract,
mm-hmm.
bring it back to boil, watch for the mess you're going to make on the stove with a boil over.
Okay. Right.
And that will make a mess. So you have to be careful.
Okay.
And at various points add the hops, which look like rabbit food.
Mm-hmm.
Don't taste like it, but
good.
They look like rabbit.
Okay.
Rabbit food. And then at the end, what I would do is I would take then that 2.5 gallons of what had just been boiling liquid after an hour of boiling, and pour it into either a carboy or a plastic bucket that may have 2 gallons of ice-cold water in it.
Yeah.
That cools it down to about 70 degrees. Then I'll top it off with a little more water. And then I would think that if Randy brought packets of dry yeast, you would sprinkle that on top of it.
I see that.
put an airlock on there and have it sit, at, depending on the style of beer, at approximately cellar temperature or between 65 and 70 degrees. It'll start to bubble away and get about an inch or two of a Croizen head on the top of it. And after, depending on the style of beer, anywhere from a week to a month, it becomes beer.
And Randy Barrel, I open it up a week to a month later. That doesn't take long. And what have I got? Does it come spraying out? Does it build up a big sort of pressure in there? Foaming out, or is it? I have no idea. You open the bucket, and what have you got?
Not quite. One of the really common questions I get is my house now going to smell like a brewery? And I have to tell you, if you can smell the beer fermenting, something's wrong. You need to check on that beer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been to big breweries, and that wonderful smell almost of fresh-baked bread in the air. Was something wrong there?
Oh, not at all. When you're brewing on an industrial scale, you have thousands of gallons of beer spilled on the floor every day, and
okay.
It's splashing around all over the place. And it just happens to be how a brewery smells because they're dealing with it every day. When you're making beer, it's kind of like making a stir fry. You know, you have those hot, spicy aromas in your kitchen when you're frying everything up. But then after dinner, you're cleaning up, and that all kind of dissipates. And it's similar with beer. As Rich was saying, after the beer has a chance to do its fermentation, the yeast does its work digesting all the sugars. You need to put it into bottles and then wait for the bottles to actually carbonate naturally. That's called bottle conditioning.
I see. So I've got water. I've got the, malt extract.
Yep.
I've got yeast. Remind me, what else is in here?
The spice of beer, the hops.
The hops, of course. Yeah, how can you can't do it without the hops. And then no doubt all kinds of other things that people can throw in to make their own unique sort of twist.
Oh, certainly. Those are just the base ingredients, what the Germans consider for their purity law, the only ingredients in beer. But we aren't restricted by that as homebrewers. If you want to have a cayenne beer with a little bit of a spicy kick to it, that's great. If you want to have a fruit flavor, you can add fruit. Or you can tease your yeast a little bit and get them to give you that aroma as well.
And listeners, if you could see the table between Randy Barrel and I here, it is absolutely covered with beer and beer bottles. We'll have just a little sip. Brad Ring, give us a sense of when this came back from. I don't know, was it illegal in this country? When did it become legal? And when did it really start to take off? What's the status now of home brewing in this country?
Well, back in 1978, Jimmy Carter actually signed a bill legalizing home brewing on the federal level. It allows 100 gallons per adult or 200 gallons per household.
That ought to do it.
That should keep most of us pretty happy.
More than.
Really, it's slowly built over time. I would say in the last decade especially, homebrewing's really been fueled in large part by the growth of local craft commercial beers. There's greater availability than ever before for more people to be exposed to the flavorful and creative beers that are out there on the commercial side. And just pretty much when you go hand in glove with that, a lot of beer lovers are going to want to take that interest in beer to the next step and have a hands-on experience actually making the beer.
Rich Heller, you're out there in beer country in Milwaukee. What brings you got all kinds of beer around. It's not like there's any shortage. What brings people to home brewing, Rich?
Well, what kind of brought me to it, I started off and what I got tasting good beer when I was playing rugby. And we drank more than just the yellow fizzy stuff, of which the big brewers are very good at making, and started tasting some more what were at that time exotic beers, and discovering that the beer actually had some flavor to it beyond just a very light malt and hop taste.
Well, I hear the homebrew chauvinist coming in through loud and clear here. Once you've had it, you can't go back. Is that the way, Rich?
No, not at all. And I would tell, as I'm sure that both Randy and Brad would say, the best brewers in the world are those that can duplicate their beer again and again. So the big brewers, which do that, they're excellent brewers. I just happen to not prefer, put it in another parlance, I don't prefer white bread. I like rye and whole wheat and all the other types.
Randy,
so I like the difference.
Yeah, no doubt. We can imagine that. We're going to taste that in just a couple of minutes here. I mean, Randy, I'm reading that there's a lot of 20-somethings who have come to home brewing. Is this part of the kind of craft movement or the locavore movement at the same time?
Well, especially in the Boston area, to make it local, we have a very large demographic shift just because of all the colleges that are in the Boston area. And these are people who have grown up always having access to that craft beer. They've had the Sierra Nevadas. They've had the Sam Adams always available to them. And those guys were trailblazers, and they really opened it up for all of the new places that that make their own beer on premise, the brew pubs, or are just providing different flavors that are demanded by the market.
And once you get there, it's a short step to doing it at home.
I hope so.
Well, you hope so. You sell all this stuff, right? You've got these big plastic buckets, and off we go. What's the trade like? People coming in, people doing this? Is this hopping in your neck of the woods now?
Oh, yeah. We're introducing new people to homebrewing every day. Someone comes in, you know, I've had some interesting flavors. I want to give my hand at doing it at home. And we have the equipment and the materials to help them do that, and hopefully the expertise so that they do it well.
Easier or harder than wine, making your own?
It's a tricky question because we also have wine kits that make wine making as difficult as making Campbell's soup. If you can do that at home, you can make wine. You can also make beer.
Well, I go to some hollow in this country, and gallons of wash I can go on a spree. No woman to follow, the world is all mine. I love them so well as I love the moonshine. Well, I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a long ways from home. And if you don't like me, then leave me alone. I'll eat when I'm hungry, I'll drink when I'm dry. And if the moonshine don't kill me, I'll live till I die.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It's October, Oktoberfest time, tailgate time, and we're talking about home-brewed beer. Homebrew. Rich Heller is with us from the Beer Barons of Milwaukee. Great to have him from Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Brad Ring in Manchester, Vermont joins us, publisher of Brew Your Own magazine. And with me in the studio with a whole lot of beer, we'll pop some tops in just a second here, Randy Barrel. He's manager of the Homebrew Emporium in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Randy, Rich, Brad, we've got great sort of feedback here already. Here from the website, let's dive in here with Mike in Hickory, North Carolina. He says, some folks enter the hobby to make beer inexpensively. I'll ask about that. Others to make something that's not available in their local stores. He says, I brew beer because there's something incredibly primal about the process. As I toil in my garage over a boiling kettle, I can't help but feel that I'm participating in an ancient, truly human act, something about a brew day that connects me with thousands of years of human history. When I think of the fact that man was brewing beer before he was making bread, I get the chills. And here's one more from Facebook. This is Alexandra. My fiancé's family, she writes, has a tradition where one member brews beer for Christmas, then passes all the equipment on to another member to make the beer for the following year. Every year's beer has a clever name and is introduced with a funny poem or story. It's my turn this year, she writes, and I'm brewing. Oh, wait, that sounds pretty great. Let's get a caller. Blake, Nashua, New Hampshire. Blake, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Favorite radio show and favorite topic.
Bless you on both counts.
Thank you. I'm a brand new home brewer. I've got my hobby amber in the secondary right now. But I have a question or a comment and a question. I'm currently preparing something new. I read an article in All About Beer magazine about how to make your own bourbon barrel-aged beer at home. Using a bourbon barrel, it's typically 50 gallons, and so I don't have 50 gallons worth of equipment in my house. So what I ended up doing, per the instructions of the article, is I cut up some pieces of white oak, charred it with a propane torch, and I have it sitting in a bottle of bourbon right now. Then it should sit there for 6 months. From there, I take it and put it into a fermenter, whatever beer I am happening to brew 6 months from now. And I really just wanted to get the inside of these professionals here and hear what they might have to say about which style might accommodate this bourbon flavor. I know it's pretty popular right now, and there's lots of ways to do it, but just wanted to hear what they had to say about it.
Blake, you've put us in a whole world of wonder there. Let me go to Beer Country Milwaukee first, and Rich Heller. Rich, what do you say to Blake? You want beer, bourbon barrel-aged beer?
Well, good for him. That's an area that is booming, and bourbon and wood-aged beer is a growing part of the hobby. You can get oak from your local homebrew store, and what I'll do is I will put it in a pot with a little bit of bourbon in the pot, and I will pasteurize those oak chips or cubes, and then I will add those directly to the secondary. I find that to be the easiest way to do it. I don't want the bourbon to overpower the beer. I want it to be a subtle background flavor.
Randy Barrell, help us out here. First of all, those of us who are not home brewers, the secondary, what's that? And any advice for Blake on what he's up to here?
Yep. The secondary is another vessel in the brewing process. The beer undergoes a fermentation by the yeast. That can all happen in one container called a single-stage fermenter, mm-hmm. or you can break that into two containers. So you have the primary fermenter and the secondary fermenter. Mm-hmm. Not necessary, strictly speaking, but if you use it properly, you're going to get better-looking and better-tasting beer.
Okay. So he wants to get the bourbon flavor going on. Yep. Advice for him, you hear where he's headed.
Yep. As Rich was saying, very strong flavors you get out of the bourbon chips. I feel that darker beers, stouts, and porters are very common with that. And the vanilla works really well with the chocolate flavors you find in those beers.
We're going to learn more about that in just a minute. Lip to bottle. Nicole in Post Mills, Vermont. Nicole, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to let you know that I had started out as a home brewer. As a kid, I went to the Olympia Brewing Company in Washington and saw all this metal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been
machine.
There. Yeah.
And then I grew up in California, and a friend in college gave me a bottle of beer he brewed, and it was delicious. And then it turned out that my college craft center had a beer brewing class, and so my now husband and I took it. And so I'd learned how to home brew, and I did that for a couple of years, and then moved back to my hometown, and the local brewery there was hiring a bartender, but they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I really want to brew. And they said, well, okay, we'll take you on as the assistant brewer. And so apparently I was the only person that stuck around doing that. And then 6 months later, the head brewer left, and so I was the one who knew the equipment, and so I was the head brewer.
So now, is it your business now, Nicole? Are you into...
Well, yeah, and then I actually moved to San Diego. I worked for White Labs Yeast for a while. I worked in a homebrew shop. And now I make hard cider for a living. So I actually, you know, that was back in the early 90s, and I've turned it into a career.
And what do you say to those who are just starting to do it or thinking about doing it? The home brew, is it like impossibly subtle and difficult? Can you plunge in and have something drinkable?
Oh, absolutely. As long as you're paying attention and keeping everything clean, you can make whatever you want and really rely on the guys at your homebrew shop for help. You know, if you've got something that went a little funny, or if you're wondering how you could fix something, or, you know, like the guy who called last and, you know, wanted to know sort of which direction to head, I think that's the best way to make the best thing that you can. And it's, as long as you're clean, it's going to turn out good.
As long as you're clean. Nicole, I'm so glad you called. I mean, Brad Ring, this keep it clean, because if you don't, whatever is in there is going to ferment into the beer. I read somewhere, gave me a laugh, somebody said, well, it tastes a little Belgian if it gets funky that way. I'm not sure what that means, but funny euphemism. But what about this? The whole issue, Brad, of people who start out as regular home brewers? I mean, I'm reading an article here from the Denver Post. This is just a few days ago. They're reporting on the Great American Beer Festival, the 29th edition thereof out in Colorado, and says this is small craft breweries. And they said almost every brewer there traces his or her beginnings back to a batch of home brew that they've then turned into their business.
No, it's really true. There's a great interchange between the commercial craft brewers across the country, all having homebrewing roots. And most of them really haven't forgotten those roots. One of the most popular things for a lot of hobbyists is to try to recreate some of their favorite commercial beers out there that they've fallen in love with. And what we find is, as we go out, we'll contact the commercial brewers, and more often than not, they'll be more than happy to share their recipes, again, harking back and wanting to help out the home brewers, because that's where they started out.
We've got a lot more callers here. We'll come to them, but there's too much beer here not to have a little flavor going on. Let's start with one, Randy, one of your own right here. This is Barrel-Aged Imperial Stout. Let's pop it open. Tell us about it, Randy. What have we got here?
Absolutely. As the previous caller said, usually when you're dealing with oak, you have this 55-gallon barrel, and this is one that was
opened. Sounds right.
Yeah. This is one that the local brewing club actually did, so it's not just my beer.
Okay.
A whole bunch of guys in the Boston area got together. They brewed up 60 to 65 gallons of beer and filled that 55-gallon barrel.
These are those known as the wort processes at the Big Barrel
them.
Brew. Oh, boy. Okay. This is dark. This is almost black. Wow. Stout meaning what? Keep us amateurs informed here.
Stout's usually an indicator of strength because historically the darker beers had more malt in it, and so it got a darker color. This is an imperial because it was designed to be higher alcohol than your standard stout.
12%, I'm reading here. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really a kick. It'll be the tiniest sip ever here. And barrel aged, meaning they're not using just these kind of plastic buckets, but...
No, they forwent... They didn't use the buckets at all. They just put the beer directly into that barrel and did all the fermentation in there. And once that was done, they topped it off with some beer that they had on the side they saved for topping off the barrel.
Okay, I'm diving in. Tell us about this flavor. Here we go. What are we tasting? Boy.
It's got a strong roastiness to it. Definitely some vanilla coming through from the oak. It's for 12%, it's pretty smooth, I would say.
It's very smooth, though you know you've got some alcohol going on here.
Oh,
the tiniest sip, and you know that.
Yes, absolutely. And you have to be careful with these imperial beers because you can make them so smooth that, you know, you're hanging out with the in-laws and all of a sudden you're having trouble.
You have a lampshade on your head.
Yep.
That's not where we want to go. Barrel-aged imperial stout from the wort processors right here on the table. Man, that, talk about full body. That is rich and that is something. Mike in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just so happy. I just got in my car, pulled over now to talk, but just so happy to hear about the topic. And I caught the bug. I did some traveling and drank a lot of beers in Munich and spent some time at Oktoberfest and in Prague and really just fell in love with those beers and the quality of flavors you can get. And came back home and just couldn't find it anywhere. You can buy a lot of them commercially, but they just spend so much time on a boat that they've lost all their character and taste skunky. And so I set off reading as much as I could, learning as much as I could, and just jumped head first. I know they talked about all grain brewing, and that's the more complicated and more time-consuming process. And I just bought all the equipment, set everything up, and jumped head first, and really happy with the beers I'm making. And I think I've found my passion for life. I have all the next beers probably for the next 20 years planned out in my head.
Unbelievable. Passion for life. And do your friends like it? Do they like to come to your poker game now, Mike, or your backyard barbecue?
That's probably the best part about it is just sharing your beer with somebody else and hearing their feedback. And even when you get arrogant enough, you start lining them up side by side with some of the commercial ones and seeing if people can tell which is yours and which isn't.
Taste the splendor of my beer. Mike, we're glad you pulled over. I'm really glad for your call. Thanks. We're going to dive into one of Rich Heller's here in just a second. Let me get a call, though, first from, Idaho Falls, Idaho. And Tom. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you know?
Well, I just want to let you know, first of all, I've been a home brewer for about 16 years.
Oh.
And in our family, it's become generational because my son has also expressed an interest in it, and he's taken off and started doing his home brewing. And another point I wanted to make is how much fun it is to use some of your own homegrown ingredients into your beer.
Like what, Tom? What do you pluck
instance,
out there in Idaho?
What's that?
What do you pluck and include in Idaho?
Well, how about spruce bud beer, using spruce buds in addition to hops? As a matter of fact, I made one, my home brew, using spruce buds instead of hops, and it actually won second place at our local state fair.
That's terrific. I mean, it sounds very Idaho, spruce bud, and very delicious. What's the flavor of that, Tom? Just the same thing we smell in the spruce forest?
Well, it's very unusual. You know, when I first saw the recipe, they said it kind of tasted like a cola, and indeed, it had kind of some interesting side flavors in it. Let's put it that way. But apparently, it was unusual enough. Like I said, I was able to get a ribbon out of it at the state fair.
That's pretty proud stuff. And raspberry too, you say?
And raspberry, correct. I was able to use some of our homegrown raspberries in the backyard, and actually, that was to make a mead, and I used local. Local honey, you know, to make that mead.
Jeez.
And that was a big hit with the wife and her friends, too.
Idaho State Fair ribbon winner. It sounds absolutely delicious, Tom, and I'm so glad you called. Thank you very much. Let's get another one going here. We've got one from Rich Heller. This is Lambic, Belgian style, I'm reading here. Rich, tell us about this. We're about to crack her open.
Well, it is a Belgian style beer, and I'm sure Randy there in studio will enjoy this. This did score well in regional competition, and I made this in the fall of 2006. And the one thing about lambics is, yes, they're supposed to taste the way that they taste. It is that a lot of Belgian brewers do open fermentation.
Okay.
And with that, wild critters fall in and give it a little bit more of a different taste, maybe even described perhaps as horse blankety, barnyard type of smell.
Oh.
And yes, this is on purpose.
Wild critters in my lambic Belgian style. I guess anything goes with Belgian beer. I'm sniffing around here for chipmunk. I don't smell it yet.
Well, just dig.
Oh, yes, I do. No, I do. So you get closer, and I know what you mean by horse blanket. We definitely got. I don't think a horse fell in here. What does that really come from, Rich? Don't tell me you've got some. I don't know, Wisconsin rodent in here.
No. They came from one of the yeast suppliers. They supply us the specific yeast that will give this type of taste. And then I added
Rich, you're killing me. I have to work up to this. That's got some bite kick.
Well, Randy and Brad will tell you that this is very
something.
Growing category of beers. The sour beers are really showing exponential growth.
I can imagine. But Brad, I feel like a babe in the woods here. That's beer like I've never had.
The fun thing, especially over the last decade, is just the eye-opening nature of, especially with a lot of the commercial beers and then the homebrewers as well, opening the eyes up as to what a beer can truly be. I think most of us grew up thinking a beer was specifically just sort of an American Pilsner type beer. But as you can tell from drinking Rich's beer, it really is a pretty far-flung family of taste that you can get into.
Rich, by my second or third sip here, you really got me going places. This is something. There's nothing boring about what you've got going on in this glass.
No, and that was my first attempt at a lambic, and I also, at the time that I kegged it, which a lot of homebrewers will keg their beers using the old soda canisters,
okay.
I added a bottle of raspberry liqueur as the priming agent into the keg. So you have a little bit of taste of raspberry and color from it in there.
I can see that color. It's almost jewel-like color, Randy Barrel, drinking it a little bit here with me. That's something. What do you taste there, Randy? The sour is definitely going on, and the raspberry, and a little bit of that horse, you name it, horse barn.
There's definitely a lot going on in this style of beer. I have to admit, not my preferred style. But, you know, to each their
man
own.
Man up here, Randy, or woman up. I don't know, Belgian up.
And, you know, some people love this stuff. That's great. It's definitely a growing industry. And, you know, that's part of the power of homebrewing. You can make beer like you want to brew because you're brewing for one.
The Beer Barons of Milwaukee. Is this a favorite in your circle, Rich?
Oh, of those that are fans of sour beers, this one's a huge hit.
Sour beer, is that a seasonal thing? I don't know, summer, fall, winter. When do you crack that one open?
Tends to be the tart and the sour tends to be more of a summer type of refresher, as you might think of a tartness in say a lemonade or those other guys can comment, the Berliner Weiss, something that has sour taste.
Here's a little Greg Brown on Flat Stuff.
And Pete hollers to Ruthie, open me a beer. And when you get it open, bring it over here. Flat stuff. Flat stuff. Way out to the setting sun.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It is Oktoberfest time, tailgate time, and we're talking about home brewed beer. Home brew with Randy Barrel, manager of Homebrew Emporium in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Brad Ring, publisher of Brew Your Own magazine in Manchester, Vermont, and Rich Heller joins us from Milwaukee. He's president of the Beer Barons of Milwaukee. And I should say, you can see some great homebrew photos from our On Point listeners and see what our beer-filled studio looks like right now at onpointradio.org. Check it out. It is a sight to behold right here. Let's get something else going here. Peach Wheat. This is from Brad Ring. Sent it down from Vermont. Randy's going to pop it open. Brad, tell us what we've got here.
Well, this actually was made by Dave Green in our office. Made it about 3 weeks ago, and it's an American wheat ale. And as you pour it in the glass, you see it's got a nice
lighter color. Yeah.
And one of the real treats with this beer that I thought you'd like, Tom, is put your nose in there and take a big whiff.
Well, it feels like I could put it on my toast. It smells like it anyway. It's got the peach going for sure.
Got lots of peach. So Dave added quite a few pounds of pureed peaches into this, and it's comes in at a little bit a normal alcohol level, mm-hmm. a little bit more than 5%, and it's really a nice, refreshing, probably more of a summertime type beer.
Yeah, it's got the smell almost of a little peach brandy, but a very light and summer. Boy, that would surely be delicious. This is kind of the other end of the puncho meter from Lambic here with your peach wheat, Brad.
Yeah, we're definitely with this style reeling it way back compared to the Lambic.
It's very light though, and very delicious. If you want something light going on, Zach in Owensboro, Kentucky. Zach, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I've been listening to the program here and sitting here, been interested in starting home brewing, and I was just wondering if maybe any of the panel had any tips on starting out. I've been interested in making a mead. I'm not sure what flavor to make yet, but I was wondering if any of your panelists had any sort of tips for anyone starting out, and I'll take my answers off the air.
Well, Zach, I appreciate your call. Randy, it's kind of your business. So help Zach get his head pointed toward just getting started.
It happens to be my business, but mead was actually the way I got started in home brewing.
That's the honey version here.
Yep,
of.
Yep. Okay. Instead of having barley as the provider of sugars for the yeast, you're using honey to give you those sugars. For me, my grandparents had a rhubarb patch, and I wanted to use up the rhubarb. So in the early days of the internet, I found this recipe online, and they are amazingly simple. You want to use 2 to 4 pounds of honey per gallon of product that you're trying to make. With the fruit, you could use 2 to 4 pounds again. The more fruit you use, the stronger the flavor is going to be. Actually called a melomel is the nomenclature for yeast. But eventually, all you actually need is a container to ferment in. You're going to need the honey, obviously. The higher quality the honey, the better the mead. But when you're just starting out, supermarket honey will do it for you. It's nice and simple and usually a little bit cheaper than specialty.
How many hours of labor to get a batch sitting there ready to wait on?
You're ready to be disappointed? Mead, you're talking about 20 minutes setting it up.
20 minutes?
Yeah, and 10 of it's cleaning stuff.
And then how long before it's ready to quaff?
Now, mead is more of taken out of the winemaker's book, mm-hmm. so it's a very patient kind of beverage. You want to ferment it at least 6 weeks. We talked about having a secondary as part of your fermentation vessels.
Right.
Meads really benefit from a tertiary container. Keep moving it around every 2 months or so into another sealed container. You'll get clearer mead in the end. The flavors will come out better. That's what I'd recommend. Just have some patience with it and have fun with it.
20 minutes to make, 6 months to wait. That doesn't sound bad for a nice batch of mead. Zach, good luck as you take off there. Andrew in Boston. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? And hi, Randy. It's good to talk to you. We've talked plenty of times at the Homebrew Emporium.
Great. What's your homebrew story, Andrew?
Well, I started homebrewing in college, Tom, just for fun, because a couple of my friends started doing it and got real excited about it. And I actually managed to turn it into a full-time job at a local brewery here in Boston.
So you're like a brewer for them now? Did you get that much, I don't know, skill doing it at home? How much beer do you have to brew before you can step up and start doing it professionally, Andrew?
Well, I'm not an official brewer at the company I work for. I do still homebrew for fun at home. But I've worked in sales and other customer service jobs at local breweries, and I was able to get a full-time job at a local brewery just 2 weeks after I graduated from college here.
Hey, job seekers, take a hint. What's the allure of it for you, Andrew? Why, you know, homebrew instead of pick it up at the package store?
Well, there's just this sense of connection with the beer that you're making, and it also kind of gets you into the industry. And the industry is full of great people and a lot of fun companies and a lot of really interesting styles of beer. And really, you're constantly being surprised with new stuff and meeting new people and trying beers from all around the country and the world.
A beer and a job. That's not a bad combination these days. Andrew, thanks for your call. Let me get one more right here. Hatsy in Hamilton, Massachusetts. Hatsy, you're on the air.
Hi, and hi, Rich. One of my great-grandfathers founded the Aurora Malting Company, which you may know of.
I
and
do.
My other great-grandfather founded the Haffenreffer breweries that are in Jamaica Plain.
Well, you're a beer heiress, Hatsy.
I am. My contribution to the brewing effort is to grow my own hops.
Okay.
And my question to you is, how should I be processing my hops after I pick them? I get maybe 4 huge pillowcases full of this wonderful smelling fragrant fruit in late September.
Describe it a little further, Hatsy. Like, I don't know what hops is. Does it really look like a bud or actual fruit, or what's it look like?
It looks like a little cone. It's a little cone,
yeah.
And inside each of the tiny cones, which is the cones are about an inch long. It's grown. It's a vine. It's a beautiful vine, actually, with
a leaf here.
A little bit like a grape leaf.
Yeah.
It grows very healthily in my garden in Hamilton, and I get this mess of harvest at the end of the year, which I give to two of my sons who are brewers and home brewers.
Yeah.
One of them is actually a professional brewer and has something called Haffenreffer Private Stock Malt Liquor,
okay,
which he makes.
Oh, that's the hard end of the scale. But let's get some advice on that processing. I don't know, Rich. Do you get that far into it? Are you all the way out in the hops field and processing that fruit, Rich?
Oh, sure. What people will do, they tend to pick the hops, she mentioned, near the end of September when they start to dry off. What a lot of people will do is they'll either use a food dehydrator and put them in there, but it sounds like with the 4 pillowcases full, that'd be quite a bit.
Yes.
They'll spread it out on a screen in a garage and let them dry off for a week or so, and use them as whole hops, and use them as a finishing hop or as a dry hop.
Hatsy, does that get you where you need to go?
Great. I will tell the brewing sons it should be the finishing hop as opposed to an earlier.
As opposed to a hop that's added at the beginning of the boil. Because as even though when you're propagating your own hops, they're pollinated by other things around there, and they're not going to produce the same alpha acid, which is the key ingredient in hop for the bitterness. So it's not as predictable as what you're doing early. You can miss on your numbers in the finishing hop and not screw up your beer too badly.
There you go. Some advice for the brewing sons. Hatsy, good luck with that, and thanks very much for your call. Here's a question from Facebook. Martin says, I don't know who can answer this. I've read in a textbook on the history of work that the workers in Egypt who built the pyramids were paid with beer. Now, I have no idea how Moses and everybody else figures into this picture. Brad, Rich, Randy doesn't know.
We just sent to the printer our November issue, which has in it a story about archaeologists that pulled food residues out of King Tut's tomb. And we've got a beer recipe that was developed off of those findings. So you can hopefully brew a recreation of King Tut's beer. So there was brewing
good.
Way back when, and I guess that's how the pyramids got built.
Martin, I don't know exactly about your answer on Facebook, but you can have King Tut's tomb beer going on there. Talk about exotic. Let's slowly open another one here. Let's see, what have we got? Another one from Randy. This is called, what, Winter in Boston?
Yep. I'm going to be a little careful opening this one because this
big
one
bottle.
I actually did bottle condition, so there's living yeast in here.
Okay.
Every once in a while, it'll foam excessively as I open it, so I have some equipment here to make sure that
this is spiced holiday ale, is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Spiced with what?
There it is. A little touch of cinnamon. I use some honey in it. It's something to warm me up during the winter months. And I look forward to making this beer every year. I usually make it in the spring, let it cellar all summer, try to keep it under 60 degrees.
Kind of a medium dark here, nice head of foam. And, yeah, definitely got the little holiday, I don't know, cinnamon, you name it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very tasty. Yeah. It's thick. It's got that stouty thickness to it at the same time.
Yeah, I find that helps with winter ales, you know, take the chill off a little bit. This one is also starting to develop some significant age. This is the Winter in Boston 08, which
taste
means
that.
I brewed it in the spring of 08. And so it's had 2.5 years now to really develop these full flavors.
How long is a beer good for? I mean, what are the beers you need to drink right away, Rich, and beers you need to leave on the shelf or in the cellar, Rich?
A lot of the bigger beers tend to benefit by aging. It lets the alcohol back up into the flavor profile. So those are beers that you can lay down for years, the big beers. The smaller beers, your basic pale ales or something, I can figure I can make one today and I could drink it in a week. So
wow.
It depends on the alcohol level of the beer.
One week and around we go. We're learning. Jason in Chesapeake, Virginia. Jason, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you know?
Well, I just wanted to let you guys know that I am an avid home brewer. I've been brewing beer for about 8 years now. I was turned on by a friend in college. I just really took off with it. My first batch was a hit, and right now, my wife is cool enough to let me have a bar at home, so we've got two taps built into the kitchen counter with homebrew on tap. I've got an India Black Ale and a beer called Figgin Awesome IPA that's an IPA made with fresh-picked figs. Those two on tap, and then I've got five other beers in some stage of fermentation right now, a couple that are lagering. I've got some Pilsners. I told the screener that he seemed to get real excited. I've got a Halloween beer that I made that is aging right now. It's an Imperial Smoked Chili Pepper Porter. And, you know, home brewing is as easy as making a pot of soup. You know, like several callers said before, if you can keep it clean and you've got some patience, it's an incredible hobby. It's extremely rewarding, and it's really not that hard.
Imperial Smoked Chili Pepper. Well, it just is Halloween brew. This gets better and better. Yes, you better believe my producers are excited, Jason, because they're all outside looking in at all the beer. But the description is awesome. Do you ever buy beer anymore, Jason?
Yes, that's the goal, is not to. But yes, I got turned on to home brewing from my buddy, and also just being inspired by the craft brew movement that's been, you know, having a renaissance for the past 10 or 15 years or so. Hugely inspired by Dogfish Head. They're a great craft brewery that does a lot of really funky off-center type of beers. And the answer is yes. But my goal is to keep enough beer on tap so that we don't have to buy beer often.
Jason, that sounds like a great range. We won't forget Figgin Awesome anytime soon. Thanks for your call. And another here from Leominster, Massachusetts, Chad. Chad, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I just want to say that, yeah, I think it's a completely durable process that anybody can do. I'm making beer right now. It's fun. And, hey, you know, some people have boats, and I've got a basement full of equipment to do this. So that's what I got to say.
You're making it right now. What's it smell like, Chad, if you got it going on?
Oh, it's great. It smells like cereal or sweet oatmeal. The mash is just doing its thing. I'm just standing around listening to the radio.
That's pretty great. The mash is on in Leominster. Chad, thank you very much for your call. We got a couple more here. I'm just about to taste it out here to keep everything going on just right. But tell us about him anyway. Brad, you've got a coffee chocolate stout. I'll take the tiniest sip here. Let's crack it up. And what do we have here, Brad?
Well, we've got a stout that was made with some home-roasted coffee and then actually some home-roasted cocoa beans. So take a big sniff, and it smells like your morning coffee, but with benefits.
Looks like Hershey's chocolate almost. I'm going to sniff this, and while I do, tell us, Rich, about your grand crew. Maybe before we're off air that we get to it. Your grand coriander and orange peel, Rich?
Yeah, it's essentially a Belgian white style of beer, but I kind of ramped it up and tweaked the recipe around and still added the coriander and the orange peel. And John and I in studio here in Milwaukee are enjoying it. We couldn't wait for you, so we already started.
I'm not doubting that at all. I'm still back here in chocolate land. That is the – talk about chocolate beer, Brad. I mean, that's straight up heavy-duty chocolate.
Yeah, no, a lot of chocolate and a lot of coffee. And wanted to let you know, Tom, and for all the listeners, that we ended up putting up the recipes for all the beers that we sent you up online at BYO.com for anyone who wants to try to make these at home.
Well, that's terrific. I think I'm going to draw the line right there. All things in moderation, we say here. But I can see where the enthusiasm comes for these beers. I mean, the flavors are just remarkable and all over the map of brewing and the map of the world. You all have been really generous and wonderful to be with us. We're grateful for the beers you sent in and for your time here today. Just great to have you. Rich Heller, president of the Beer Barons of Milwaukee. Rich, happy brewing, and thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Tom.
Great to have you. Brad Ring, publisher of Brew Your Own magazine up in Manchester, Vermont. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom. It was a lot of fun.
And Randy Barrell, I can't thank you enough for everything you put together for us here. Manager of Homebrew Emporium in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Happy brewing to you, Randy. Thanks for coming in.
No problem, Tom. If you want to start getting into this, you come see me.
Okay, we'll be in touch. Listeners, lots of great photos at our website. We'll go out with real big fish and beer. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.